What's up, Monster Kids? You staying up way too late watching Bela Lugosi and Vincent Price on TV? Well, I've got the podcast for you. Cobwebs, a gothic cinema podcast in which I, Daniel Epler, and a rotating panel of guests dive into the history of the gothic horror genre and its influence on cinema today.
Now, before the party begins, let's go over the details.
I'm talking Hammer Horror, Universal Monsters, Edgar Allan Poe, and even the modern stuff that draws inspiration from those.
There are dark corners. Horror's almost impossible to imagine.
So if you've always felt you'd be a little more at home in a Transylvanian castle with the vampires in the crypt, then head to cobwebspodcast.com or check us out on major podcasting platforms. Cobwebs, a gothic cinema podcast guaranteed to give you the spooks.
To another special episode of the Dead Ringers podcast, live from Fantastic Fest 2019. My name is Noel McBride, and I am joined by the same crew that will be joining me on all of these episodes. That is Kat Adams, Paul Farrell, and Emily Von Zayla. We're going to just get right into things rather than horse around at all. So the first thing we saw on day three was The Long Walk, the new movie from Matty Doe, who did Dearest Sister, which was a Shudder release that I feel like a lot of people are probably aware of. I still haven't seen that. You saw that, right, Kat?
I did. Actually, I watched it when we were picking Ben up at the airport, and then y'all got here, so I haven't finished it, but I was very into it.
And I think, as we'll get to, after this one, we are both definitely going to check that out.
For sure.
It didn't help, or it definitely helped that the movie started with an introduction from Matty Doe, producer, and she was basically talking about how the movie was made as a real, like, was made sort of a tribute to, like, losing her mother, and then also specifically losing her dog, Mango, recently. So she, like, already started crying early on, and it was just, like, it set a good tone, at least for Kat and I.
And she's very charming.
Yes. So she's very charming, good talker.
Delightful. Evidently, her background's in ballet, and she was like a nail technician, and she just found producers, and they've stuck with her because she keeps turning out great films.
Yeah, and like she said all that, and you're like, because she was just, again, talking about how important it was, like, that people believed in her, and that, like, this person who, you know, like she said, like, working in a nail salon could then direct a movie, and like, one of the biggest things about this movie is that it's just super well directed. So quick setup is that it's just like, it's kind of a, I call it like a lo-fi sci-fi movie. It's about an older man living in some undisclosed distant future. Things sort of look all the same, except for there's just like little hints of, like, you can tell technology is different because, like, he's got like a wristwatch, like a digital wristwatch, like embedded in his wrist.
And as she Matty Doe commented after the screening how she's from Laos. And how technology is filtering its way down to Lao, and how sort of that constant screen exposure always on is conflicting with their culture a little bit. And the film is set in a horror village in Lao with a horror man as the center. And so it makes sense that he would just see a little bit of technology, but not anything revolutionary. And all of her actors are just people from the villages that she sees and likes and talks to, which is impressive because there's a child actor in it who's very good as well.
Yeah, yeah. And the mentioning that, like, you when, like, one of the first interactions you see with the main character is he, like, goes to a shop and goes to, like, swipe a phone or something to, like, pay, like, get sort of like a credits thing. And then, like, the vendor is, like, making fun of him for how old his, like, wristwatch thing is. So it's, like, you can tell, even though this is very futuristic for us, like, he's very behind on it. So it's, again, like, it doesn't, in most cases, you wouldn't even know it's sci-fi, but, like, it's there.
It is certainly not hard sci-fi. What's interesting is it is, on some level, a time travel movie, but it's actually a supernatural time travel movie. It's a ghost who walks our protagonist through different timelines. And that's the key thing, I guess, going into it. No, the the protagonist, the old man, can see ghosts of people who have not moved on because they weren't given a proper burial or their family doesn't know. And it's very influenced by Buddhist ideas of the afterlife. So he can see these people and he believes he is helping them. And you find out why he does what he does and the things that influenced him when he travels back and forth between his present day and his childhood. And it's really beautiful. It was a little slow to begin with, but in hindsight, it actually was always moving very deliberately towards where it was going. It just did it so in a quiet way.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like you mentioned that, like, it is a time travel movie, but again, the way she talked about it, and again, it being more of, like, influenced by Eastern philosophy, like, it's not a traditional time travel movie in any sense, and, like, really, it's more about, like, time looping on itself and sort of just like the way that past, present, and future are all intertwined. And so like it, like we were, we'll talk about some other time travel movies later. But with time travel movies, you almost always have some sort of plot hole that you just have to live with. And like, this sort of avoids some of that for me because of the blend of time travel and supernatural.
His actions in the past do dramatically change his present. But in ways that, yeah, are very palatable and understandable and are always on theme was we all have things we wish we could go back and change, but how much worse would it be? Because we fuck things up. That's sort of our human nature. So she played with that idea a lot, and it was great.
Yeah, yeah, that pretty much summed up it. For me, the movie is just all about someone with the best intentions trying to do the right thing and causing a whole lot of chaos as a result, because, you know, as we talked about with all sorts of horror movies like Pet Sematary, it's like if you're unwilling to let go of your emotional baggage or deal with it, it's going to come back and fuck up all sorts of things. So I really like that. And then, yeah, she continued talking after the movie, and it was all so heartfelt. I'm like, I love her now. So, and we both got to talk to her briefly and just be like, hey, we loved it, that was great.
I think we both said something along the lines of, we loved the long walk, and also, can we talk about dogs? We love dogs, we get it.
Yeah.
Nolan got to see more pictures of Mango.
Yeah. So it's just like, it was a big surprise, and like I said, well, may end up being my favorite movie of the festival, actually, but for a lot of personal reasons, but it just was really good. I mean, it was the other thing I mentioned is like the time travel and supernatural stuff ultimately turns into like a meditation on death as well, which is like sort of my catnip. Anytime people are just like, what is death? It's like, you know, I'm all about it.
And I do what we have talked about dogs a lot. Nothing, there are no animals in the film. Nothing bad happens to any animals in the film.
Yeah. And Paul, you saw it too. What did you think?
I really liked it. Another time travel journey. But so this one I actually liked because it sort of I like that it molds the supernatural with kind of the time travel thing. So it's more rooted in like a strange kind of supernatural mythology. Mm-hmm. So it begets not being explained in a way that feels really natural to the story, and it's a much more personal journey.
Yeah.
Of a movie. I think out of all the films I've seen at the festival, it's probably the most intimate movie. And obviously, like, that's informed by the fact that I believe you, as you mentioned, like, we got to see the director talk about it and
hear how personal
for her. Yeah, I mean, like, gosh, her her explanation of the movie was almost more emotional than the movie itself.
Yeah,
and it really endeared me to the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, I love how it's about sort of the events that happen to us and the way we channel those events in our lives and the people we become because of them or in spite of them or as a result of them. And it explores the many different ways that can play out. So if something, you know, we all have tragedy, I think, or something that occurred in our lifetimes that was not good and that informed decisions we made and the people we became. And sometimes those events create more monsters, and sometimes they create the best kind of people. And it's about respecting and honoring that past, as opposed to trying to cheat it and not embrace it. And sort of the effect of that and the relationships that you sort of build and what it is you're seeking. And it's a big, grandiose movie about life in the most intimate package possible. And it was brilliantly done and executed. So yeah, I mean, I can't stress this enough. You know, we did another recording where you mentioned that you thought it should be like probably the one that we elevate the most. And I think that's like, I wholeheartedly agree. It's something that like really everyone should see. And I really also liked how the science fiction component of it, because it does take place in sort of a future of sorts, was incredibly subtle, but it was very much present.
Yeah.
And I thought like the way it melded technology and kind of, you know, a future world with what felt like an ancient one, was like really, really striking and really engaging. And said a lot about culture and, you know, what the right kind of life to lead is. So I don't know. I had a lot to say. It said it really well. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's great. And then right after that, we saw Knives Out. Or, no, actually, not Knives Out. Yeah. I wish we had seen Knives Out.
That would be amazing.
We saw Knives and Skin, which I won't say too much on because I just wasn't a fan of it.
Yeah, like maybe, and I get that.
Maybe my least favorite film. You know, at the end of the day, it's maybe not as much for me, but also my issues with it were actually just the filmmaking, not what it was trying to say. I think the filmmaking got in the way of the rest for me, but I don't know. What do you think?
I have complicated feelings on it. I agree with you that when I was watching it, I did not like it. A lot of things rubbed me the wrong way. This is another movie, and this is sort of like an unfair thing to say to people who are going to be watching these movies because they won't have the benefit of this, but it was a movie that really, for me, benefited from the after talk from the director. And hearing the perspective behind this movie, because it's a very... So the movie exists in sort of a hyper-reality. It's fantasy. It's like teenage movie fantasy world. So it does... You compared it to like a lesser Diablo Cody or a copycat. Someone trying to do that but not succeeding. In a way, I kind of agree with that. It also, and again, not to like make comparisons to better movies, but it sort of was trying to do what I think The Heathers does really well, which is, again, it creates this world where the teenagers can kind of interact with each other and talk in a hyperbolic sense. Like heightened their language way. Is very heightened and probably not how real teenagers talk, but maybe closer to how they think they're talking is maybe what it is. But I guess what I like about it from a like outside looking in perspective is it's a movie about teenage girls from the perspective of teenage girls. It's written and directed by a woman who's really trying to capture that sensibility. It does, I think, do a better job than most movies that use the catalyst of, and I don't think this is a spoiler because the movie's pretty much hinged on the fact that at the beginning of the movie, a girl disappears. And most of the movie, not all of it, but most of it is about that disappearance and its spiderweb-like effect on the town that they're in. And it's an oddball cast of characters. And I think it does some interesting things attempting to subvert the trope of the pretty teenage girl that goes missing. It tries to provide her a voice and a sense of agency throughout the film that I think often is lacking in movies that use it as a catalyst. I will say some of the sequences that I did find really effective when I was watching it, even though I didn't love the movie while I was watching it, was like the song stuff. There are times where characters would sing a cappella covers of certain songs to express emotional states a la Magnolia, kind of. Again, not to say it's anything like Magnolia, but it's something Magnolia does. that I think everyone's seen, is that it's like characters will just kind of break into song at times, not in a musical kind of movie way, but in a emotional sort of way. And it'll intercut between other characters in the narrative that aren't together singing the same song. Again, like Magnolia. So it does some really interesting experimental things. The film is generally pretty attractive looking. Like the color, I like the color scheme. A lot of like purples and pinks, and it was a vivid landscape, and it does some sort of interesting stuff. The narrative is pretty alienating. If you're not getting into it, you're not probably ever going to get into it, and it's probably only going to get progressively farther away from you. So for me, at the end of the movie, like I said, I didn't really have any sort of connection to it. But I appreciate the perspective it was attempting to tell. And for what it's worth, I know a lot of people do like it. I did talk to people in the same screening as I was in that, like, adored it. So my general thought walking out of it was, it's probably just not for me. But maybe, like, there's a teenager out there that will see this movie and it will mean a ton to them. So I think it's probably worth seeing if any of the things that I mentioned sound good to you. But if you're on the fence or if you feel like that kind of stuff would annoy you, I don't think that you're going to enjoy this movie.
Yeah, it's, again, I felt watching it, like you mentioned the outlook or anything, like, I felt watching it how I feel like most people reacted to Jennifer's Body on the first time. Mm. Whereas I love that. People were like, what is this? Like, and then, yeah, I just felt like you mentioned a couple other things. Like, it definitely feels like it's going real hard for Twin Peaks. Like, extra hard. And I guess the thing was, like, I just didn't feel like it really did anything all that different. It felt very, like, I guess for me, it's like, it all felt so very on the nose. That I was, like, beating bludgeoned over the head with, like, the text. Despite trying to be very dreamy and obscure, it's still just, like, I just felt like I was being pummeled by the director reinforcing what they're trying to say. But, yeah, I mean, again, like you mentioned, like the thing is, like, in addition to a woman director, it's, like, got a really good, diverse cast.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, I didn't care about anybody, so it didn't matter to me. I don't know.
No, I get it.
It was rough.
Like I said, I agree. My emotions are very complicated on that movie because, full disclosure, yeah, I personally didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's just,
it'll appeal.
I struggled with that one. Like, yeah. But anyway, I get it. I totally get what you're saying.
Somebody, it'll connect with somebody.
Yeah.
So while we were seeing The Long Walk, Emily, you saw Swallow?
I did see Swallow, and it's actually one of my favorite films of the festival. It's about this young woman who realizes, or I guess comes to realize, that she has pica disorder, where she just swallows random household objects. And I think a lot of the audience kind of went into it thinking it was going to be like this big, crazy, like gonzo thing, but it was like a really restrained drama where the reason that she starts doing this is she's supposed to be, you know, happily married, and her husband's very successful, and she's expecting a baby, and they're very wealthy, and she should be very happy because she has no problems whatsoever, but she also has no control or agency in her own life. So she starts swallowing things just kind of as a means to try to regain that. And then as the story goes on, we start to kind of dig into her history and learn about some of the trauma that she has been repressing, and she kind of finds herself at a crossroads and at an opportunity for healing and growth. And it was just a really, really good movie.
Yeah, that's really surprising. Because again, Kat and I joked about this, and I think we joked about it with you. When we heard about this movie, we thought it was Griffin's Amiibo Corner, the movie, which, for people who don't know, the McElroy brothers had a Griffin's show, just involved sticking like the little Nintendo Amiibos in his mouth. So I was like, is she just going to swallow a bunch of random things for weird, like, to be weird?
Just
and then the fact that it actually is like a serious drama and like character study is really interesting.
Yeah.
So that's very cool.
Other things we saw on day three, later that night, we, Paul, Emily, and I all got to go to the Joe Bigos. Oh, wait, no, you didn't do that.
No, I'd seen it already.
Okay, I messed that up. Anyways,
no, it's totally fine.
Paul and I saw the Joe Bigos double feature.
I still have thoughts on both films.
And Emily, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. And Emily saw VFW. And previously saw Bliss, so and then, like, I established, like, I
have always been really interested in Joe Bigos, like his, like, almost human, just from a poster standpoint, like, capture my imagination, and then, fortunately, the movie didn't really work for me. Same with Mind's Eye. But, like, at the same time, every time I've heard him, like, on Shockwaves, or, like, heard him talk, like, he's a really passionate dude. He's a dude who's, like, really into, like, DIY, and, like, just going out and making your movie, whether you have a budget or not. So, like, I really respect that, and, like, wanted to finally, like, get into his movies, and then both of these movies worked so well for me.
You're so fucking awesome.
Yes.
These are the first two of his films I've seen, and based on these, the Bigosian film style is my...
Oh my god, that's the best term ever.
That is happening.
Yes.
Bigosian.
Bigosian.
So for people who don't know, actually, VFW, this was the world premiere, and yeah. That's the new, it's a Fangoria film, right?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, and it's, for my money, I think it's the best Fangoria movie thus far. I mean, I guess there's only been three official ones. Of
Satanic Panic
and Puppet Master Little.
Oh, that's right, thank you.
And I liked Satanic Panic, but this was kick-ass.
Yeah. This also, to me, felt like a big step up from his previous stuff, which felt like somebody working with a small budget doing the best they can, and doing well, but just, like, not completely getting there for me. And then this one, I think some of it is just, like, the actors he gets for this movie.
Right.
Yeah. It's just, like, a bevy of amazing character actors, like William Sadler, Stephen Lang. Who else is in there? Fred Ward. David Patrick Kelly. That's the guy from
Warriors. Yeah. Martin.
Yeah.
Williams. Fred Williams.
Fred Williams.
Yes.
And his son.
Yeah, which I didn't realize at the time.
Who also is in All Cheerleaders Die, which I love.
Oh, really?
Oh!
I didn't know
I like that.
He's
movie
a total
lot,
dick in that movie.
All the guys in that movie are the fucking hugest dicks.
But here he's a good guy.
Oh, yes. George, what did you say? George Wendt?
Oh, yeah, George Wendt.
George Wendt.
Can I pause and appreciate the way they had George Wendt positioned at that bar?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He had
yeah.
MC.
Yeah,
yeah. I love that he's now just in. It seems like he's in every Bigos movie.
He's a Bigos regular, which I can appreciate.
Yeah,
because I also love Twin Bliss. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves. No, I mean, we talked, and I'm having like weird deja vu because we talked about this on Corpse Club,
which you should go listen to.
You should also listen to.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's like, one thing that struck me is that in a genre movie like this, like usually these guys would be playing the villains. Mm-hmm. That's what character actors do in exploitation movies. Or they're like a sidekick.
They're there to chew the scenery.
Right. Like, but to see them, all of them, get to be the leads in this action movie, mm-hmm. this violent action movie, as old men, like, was so satisfying in its own right.
Yeah.
And then they're all so fucking good at what they do that just, like, any moment of them interacting with each other, no matter how, like, inconsequential it is riveting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you get a sense of who these people are. You get a sense of their history. You get a sense of their compassion and their convictions immediately. Yeah. And it comes from their skill at their profession. And so, you know, add that to a very fun, you know, Assault on Precinct 13 style action siege movie with practical effects that go all the way. And it's just a blast of a movie to see with the crowd. Like, it's really, this is the kind of movie that I feel like, even though it's not like a Marvel flick, like, should get a wide release. Like,
yeah,
everyone should have the opportunity to see this in a theater with a crowd because I think it will appeal to a lot of people.
Well, people will just be like, because there's so much amazing ultra violence that people will just be cheering for.
Right.
And like, yeah, you want to have at least have one other person with you that's just like, fuck yes.
Yes. Someone that gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't even thinking about it too, but like, yeah, like structurally or whatever, you know, Assault on Precinct 13 or like even like Green Room came to mind. But
Green
like,
Room, yeah.
Stylistically, actually, I just realized it does remind me a lot of like Hobo with a Shotgun, like those. Sort of like faux exploitation, but like actually good ones.
Yeah.
I think it's funny because it's like technically they're being attacked by junkies that are all hopped up on this super drug.
It's like mutant.
They're basically zombies. They basically treat them like zombies.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, let's call it what it is.
They're mindless and violent and angry.
Yeah, and they have like weird like skin and they're blue and weird colors and stuff. So it's like,
yeah,
they go all the way with it, which is which is totally fine. I totally agree with the Hobo with a Shotgun comparison in terms of the filmmaking style. I think this is a, you know, no offense to fans of that movie, but I think this is a much better movie.
Oh yeah, yes.
But
that's a slight much shabbier movie.
Yeah. But I think you're right. I think it's sort of the best of that. Like the best of the movies that are trying to be a 1970s exploitation for it.
I think it's even just in the way that like the villains depicted and like that they've got this super drug like reminds me of a lot of like the weird like the villains in Hobo with a Shotgun and stuff. So it's like
no, you're right.
The thing that I guess that's more important than comparing to that is like it just feels like another world. Like, it's a very cool, unique world, and, you know, Bigos, I think, I don't say this is a bad thing, he's a carpenter worshiper, but, like, this time it also feels like he stands on his own while still just, like, being like, hey, you know I love Carpenter, you love Carpenter, let's fucking have some fun.
Yeah.
and it still feels like his thing, so.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, yeah, that one's very fun. Definitely keep an eye out for that. I don't know if they've said anything about a release date. Or if it's even this year.
I would be shocked.
I want to say November, but it's been a lot of days. I could be pulling that completely out of
my ass. I don't know that they've, because I looked it up at one point. I don't know that, I could be wrong, but I don't know if there is an official launch date, but I imagine, like, with this like, premiere and the kind of hype that they're building, I would bet the next couple months.
Yeah.
But then Bliss is going to hit VOD in like 3 weeks or something.
Yes. Oh shit, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, great.
And so Bliss was actually, I think Bliss was made first. Mm-hmm. It's just that they're both sort of coming out at the same time. Bliss was also awesome.
Bliss, so if VFW was sort of like a crowd pleaser, right? Like, to me, Bliss was like the movie going experience to the extreme. Like, it was, for lack of a better word, to steal one of my favorite podcast phrases, pure cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like your senses are just on fire during this movie, and it really doesn't, it's going to sound a little weird, but it almost doesn't matter what's going on or what's happening because the filmmaking is so good.
Yeah.
It's so simple. I mean, you know, it's about art and creation and how explosive that process can be for somebody that really immerses themselves in it and gives themselves over to it. You can tell, like, it's an incredibly personal film for Joe Bigos.
He literally walked out at the beginning and goes, just imagine her as me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he basically admits that he was on a bunch of drugs, like, kind of losing his shit a little bit.
I think it was right after his mom. I think it was really, like, right after his mom had lost his mom.
Yeah, incredibly personal, you know, rough circumstances. And the other thing is, we didn't really mention it, but VFW is really grainy. Like, the digital grain was added to try to make it, that kind of, you know, to whatever effects you want to say. But this film was shot on 16mm and blown up to 35. And it is also really grainy, but it's the right kind of grain. It's more the natural grain that's intrinsic to that medium. And it is one of the most gorgeous movies I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, he lights it with really bright colors. Oh my god!
And the reds just like bleed off the screen, and there's so many different shades that are capable of being seen as, because it basically depicts a woman painting a picture as she's doing drugs and potentially slipping into some sort of vampirism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's giving away too much.
Yeah, because like I forgot about that, but I remember when the movie was initially pitched, it was pitched as a vampire drugged out movie. So then when it came back, I was like, oh, this does have vampire elements.
Yeah, and it's all very metaphorical. Yeah. I wouldn't say that. I mean, you could probably read it in a number of different ways. But at the end of the day, like, the painting's gorgeous, the visuals are gorgeous, the soundscape is just completely engrossing. It's one of the, it's not like this movie, but I'm going to compare it to, for me, Mandy. It reminds me of that, where Mandy's a movie where everyone was like, yes, this movie, because it's like this engrossing experience that takes you over when you're watching it. And the reason that is the way that it is because the filmmaker's vision is so strong on screen, and it's kind of rare. And I feel like Bliss is like that, but more simple. Honestly, maybe a little better paced in some ways because it's quick. It kind of, it's to the point. It's quick. It gets what it's, you know, trying to get accomplished. And I just absolutely loved it. I think this is something that everybody should really see. And if you get the chance to see it in 35mm, it's playing anywhere near you, you should try to go see it.
I think they're doing a tour, right? Or like there is...
I believe that so.
Was for AEW, I think. Oh, okay. You tweeted a thing about Bliss.
I did?
Coming to theaters. So it must be getting some small release.
Like, I actually think it is going to be in St. Louis.
You should go see it again.
I loved it. And I mean, again, it's, you're not... Unfortunately, like, how often will you get to see 35mm anymore? Especially something that's lower budget.
Did he tell you guys during the Q&A that painting is now hanging up in his living room?
Oh, really?
Oh, my Lord.
That, I love that painting. It's fucking, like, it's legitimately scary as fuck.
Yeah.
And so, like, as you're seeing, like, it progress, it's just, like, really, really effective.
I want, like, a really cool, like, poster for that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be one I would buy.
And you said, like, the sound stuff is really gross, and, like, the best word I feel like to describe it is, like, cacophonous, because it's just, like, it's just so loud, and, like, it's to the point that, like, you almost feel like you're going mad, like along with her, because it's just, like, all of the noise and, like, stuff that's coming into her head.
Yep.
And then when you add to that the really kinetic camera work, like, he does this awesome thing, I think in both films, where he just jumps into the action with a handheld and follows his actors around, and the picture is very much a part of the action, and he invites the audience into that.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I'm blanking on her name, but the woman who gives the lead performance, like, really, like, literally bears it all a whole lot. Like, but she's just, like, she's willing to go to, like, some really crazy places that...
her performance is so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of thing that should be asked in now.
Yeah.
That will be, Dora Madison.
Yes.
Thank you.
Stezzy. Yes. Yeah, she was fantastic.
And seeing these two back-to-back again, like I mentioned, you know, Almost Human, super Carpenter riff, down to, like, using the Carpenter font throughout the movie, and, like, scores Mind's Eye, going for Cronenberg scanners.
Yeah.
DFW is, you know, still in the Carpenter wheelhouse, and as well as, like, all, you know, a whole bunch of 80s genre stuff. But then Bliss feels like a totally different movie. Like, it feels nothing like his usual, like, his usual stuff. So it's like, now we're getting to see, like, him just, like, basically expand what he's able to do and, like, do all sorts of different projects, and it's exciting.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and I'm excited that both these pulled off, so now I can be fully on the Vigo's train.
And, for what it's worth, he seems like a super cool guy.
He is. Yeah, like,
he's very approachable. Like, the whole festival, he's just been kind of hanging out. Like, like, after the movie, I went up to him, I just said, hey, man, great job. He's like, thanks. And he kind of paused, like, shook my hand, like, gave me a little half-hug kind of thing. Like, you didn't have to do that. Like, he just seems like a cool guy. So, I mean, it's nice to know that he's a filmmaker with a strong vision that's really talented, that also, like, gets it and is a fan of this stuff and is kind of one of us. So, it's really cool to see him getting success. Like, he's somebody I think deserves it, and I'm really excited to see what he goes on to do.
Yeah. Like, I think even if these didn't happen, he would still keep making the movies he was making. But I am happy that, yeah, like, he's getting support from bigger people that are, like, basically giving him a little bit more money. Because I know, like, his previous, like, Almost Human was, like, made for, like, both those movies were, like, made for
and
dirt cheap.
Bliss was made for very little money. VFW is kind of, I think, his first bigger
production. Yeah, like, a couple hundred thousand production. Like that. But it just feels like, yeah, like, so many directors who don't deserve it get support, and it's like, it's nice to see, like, him come into it and, like,
the truth.
People, see people give him the support that he needs so he can make some cool stuff.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Bravo, Joe Vigos.
Yes, good job.
Yeah. Keep at it.
And then another one that you went and saw by yourself was the Mortuary Collection?
Yeah, which was fun. It's an anthology film, and the big selling point for me was that it stars Clancy Brown, who is the shit.
Yes.
And he's kind of part of the wraparound story, which is he is a mortician in this creepy-ass, almost like fairy tale-like mortuary. And this girl shows up and she's applying for a job, and he kind of wants to make sure that she really understands the nature of the business. So he kind of starts telling her the stories of some of the deceased do you say clients in a mortuary? The deceased peoples that have come through his doors.
I mean, yeah. I guess I don't know what else you'd call them.
Yeah, they're not subjects.
Yeah. It's a weird...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
If somebody knows the answer to that, please tweet me, because I'd be curious.
If you're a mortician who knows what you call the people you prepare, give us a ring.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a little bit long, but there are a couple of really solid entries into it. So even though it's a little bit draggy in places, it's still a lot of fun.
Is it a lot of shorter segments, or is it like... Because like some anthologies are like three stories, and like they're longer. Is this like...
Yeah, it's like four 15 to 20 minute ones. There's one really short one at the beginning, and then three lengthier ones.
Okay.
Yep. And every time we cut back to Clancy Brown, like, he's wearing a ton of makeup, and he's kind of decrepit, and he's just chewing all of the scenery, and he looks like he's having so much fun.
Yeah, and when you brought this up at one point before, I think it just made me think of John Carpenter Body Bags, like, just hamming it up in the mortuary, so, yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Cool.
And so, yeah, that's gonna do it for day three from Fantastic Fest for Dead Ringers. Before we go, I'll just remind everyone where they can find all of the co-hosts on the internet. Paul is at PaulIsGreat2000. Don't disrespect the name. Kat, you can find at BureauKat, BureauKat. And then Emily, you can find at HorrorellaBlog.
And you can find me at Nolan_McBride or the show's Twitter handle, which is at Dead Ringers Pod.
You can keep up with new episodes of Dead Ringers and our continuing Fantastic Fest coverage on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn. If you like the podcast, want to see us continue to do fun things like this, please subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. That'll definitely help us get the word out, grow the audience, and continue to do fun things like this. You can also find new and old episodes up at deadringerspodcast.com. And definitely keep an eye out there, as there's quite a bit of coverage coming from Paul, as he pretty much reviewed most of the movies he saw, like a warrior. And you can also follow Emily's coverage at dailydead.com, because she is actually attending on behalf of Daily Dead. So all of her written stuff will be up there, along with Heather Wixon and Adrian Torres, who were all covering the festival together. But you can still hear all of Emily's impressions of everything she saw at the festival here. So stay tuned to both places. We will be back tomorrow for some more coverage from Fantastic Fest. Thanks, as always, to Thomas Foster for our theme, and Philip Yunt for our artwork and logo. Huge thanks to all the listeners who continue to tune in, interact with us online, you know, recommend the show to others, share the show. We really appreciate it, so thank you. And yeah, as always, on behalf of my co-hosts, thanks for listening, and stay spooky.